We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, brought to you this week by Rival Fantasy. And it is the eve of my first in-season update to the top 400 prospect rankings. That'll be coming to you Thursday, May 25th. And I wanted to have Dylan White from Baseball America on to help me discuss some pop-up prospects, as well as maybe some would-you-rather prospect debates towards the end of the show. Really appreciate you joining me, Dylan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's always a pleasure to be on this, one of my favorite podcasts to be on, but also to listen to and watch. So thanks again.
Yeah, likewise. I had a little bit of an anger-induced moment when I was listening to you talk about being able to add Royce Lewis off waivers in your TGFBI league when I was listening to one of your recent pods with Jeff. And so always a good listen to the Baseball America pod you guys do together. It is a prospect update season, at least for me, about 90% of the way done, but wanted to talk through some guys with you. I think we're going to kind of almost start with sort of the deeper names and work our way to sort of the more shallower names as we go. But I'm going to basically throw a few guys that you sent my way at you, and you can sort of talk about why they've caught your eye or they've caught RoboScout's eye so far in the early going.
Let's do it.
Let's start with Hunter Goodman. Most of the guys we're going to talk about in this first part of the show are prospects who are completely off my top 400 entering the season. Hunter Goodman was in the kind of the 300 to 400 range, so that essentially qualifies, and he's been very impressive this season. Kind of a trend with some of the guys we're going to talk about. He's a bat first prospect all the way. And that's probably part of the reason why he wasn't super highly ranked coming into the year on real life lists. He's seen time at designated hitter, left field, first base, and catcher in that order of appearances. So his most appearances have come at DH, second most in left field, third most at first base. So Hunter Goodman's already at the bottom of the defensive spectrum. But what really stands out to you about his offensive tool set?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. He's a right with and at the bottom of the defensive spectrum. So he's got a very high bar that he has to clear. But he's second in AA right now in home runs with 14 behind Chandler Redmond, 26-year-old in the Cardinals organization, who's not really a viable prospect. And he's in the Rockies. So like, if he makes it up like a CJ Crone type person, he's could be definitely fantasy relevant. He has incredible exit velocities, like they're very high. And among those with the high exit velocities that he's showing, he's got like the second highest contact rate of those. So he's kind of like, those are the two main things I like to look for when I have Statcast data I can look at. It's the exit velocities and the contact rate, and then to a certain extent, chase rate. Which is kind of like how sustainable, in my opinion, is the contact rate and how much can he actualize the power in game. And he's just doing excellently. So I had this tool I made at when I was at Prospects Live, like this hitter comp tool, where it kind of looks at the profile of hitters, like walk rate, strikeout rate, slugging, ISO, ground ball rate, swing strike, all that stuff. And then it kind of compares to who was at the same level and at the same age who had comparable numbers, just to give you kind of like a ground floor of what you could expect. Like, have we seen people who've made it to the majors with that sort of profile? And the closest comp actually was Matt Mervis from 2022.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's without looking at the Statcast data. So I didn't look at Matt Mervis's like exit velocities and stuff. I'm sure they're pretty close to what Hunter Goodman's doing. Other comps there. Oh, and Matt Mervis is actually 1 year older than Goodman. So that's a tick in the box for Hunter Goodman there. The other good comps were Cary Carpenter last year and Oscar Gonzalez the year before. So, you know, he's not going to be, you know, a top 50 talent, but he's going to be usable. It looks like he's showing that he could be usable in fantasy. I took a look at his contact rate, which is around 70%, and his max exit velocity, which is 115 this year. Just to see like who kind of has the same thing in the majors this year, just to kind of get an idea. And so CJ Cron actually popped up in that same ballpark. Teoscar Hernandez is kind of there too. Jock Peterson. So I'm not saying, or Marcelo Ozuna, I think is as well. So I was trying to find guys who have like right, who bat right, right-handed. So I'm not saying he's going to be those guys, but you know, it's a viable combination of tools that could work. He's in Colorado, which is good and bad, but also the Coors factor is obviously good. So yeah, I mean, CJ Cron type of thing is kind of what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, that's really good info. The 115 max EV. It's funny that you said he kind of, Matt Mervis was a comp that got generated, because I actually think, the next guy we're going to talk about statistically looks very similar to me, to Matt Mervis, but just sticking with Goodman, he's in Hartford too, which is pretty much the only Rockies affiliate that's not extremely hitter friendly. It's more kind of neutral. So you have the, like all those guys at Spokane are putting up insane numbers. But it's encouraging to me at least that Goodman's doing this in a somewhat neutral environment. And then, you know, the hit tool metrics that you're kind of citing, that's really all that matters, because we know the power's there with him. And if he just has to make enough contact to kind of clear that bar as the DH slash left fielder slash first baseman. And yeah, I'm fairly convinced by what you're throwing out there. Where do you sort of, in your mind, kind of view him in the kind of prospect universe? Is he sort of like a borderline top 100 guy at this point, something like that?
Yeah, so Jeff Ponce and I are kind of working on our update too, fantasy based top 100. So I've put together my first blush at it. I have him at like 150-ish right now, 136 right now. So yeah, but I guess borderline 100, but I own him in a couple leagues that are 400 prospects. So I think definitely should be rostered if you can. But yeah, I think 100 is a bit aggressive, especially just because it's a, you know, first base only type profile, maybe left field. So it's, you know, harder bar to clear. Like CJ Cron was like DFA'd and he was basically available to the major league. So they're not really the most sought after, assets in real life baseball. So that kind of dings him a bit, but, you know, if he's playing regularly and he can be CJ Cron, I think, you know, obviously he's valuable. So it's that hard balance to figure out where you want to put him against these guys with the high floor or the high ceiling who will, you know, be superstar potential versus, you know, kind of a nice solid major leaguer who's on the bubble of making the rosters. So yeah, 150. Long story short.
Nice. That's kind of the general range I'm planning on slotting him as well. So I thought you might be maybe a little higher than me, but yeah, it sounds like we're kind of on the same page there. So That was Hunter Goodman with the Rockies. The next guy we're going to talk about is Nathan Martorella with the Padres. And he's the one who I think his just kind of surface stats just remind me a lot of Matt Mervis. Martorella is 22. He's at high A still. He does hit left-handed. Strikeout rate is 16.5%, walking almost 16% of the time. What do you like about Martorella? I assume the approach at the plate.
Yeah, definitely the approach at the plate. We have some NCAA StatCast data, and it was quite impressive. And then he had a brief cup of coffee in it professionally last year, and it was also impressive what he was putting up StatCast-wise. So, like I said earlier, like contact, I like max EVs or barrels or hard hit rate, and then I like chase. And he is basically plus for all of those. He was plus last year as well. So in our BA preseason first base preview, I talked about Tyler Locklear as a breakout, as a sleeper. I think he's fairly popular right now in the prospect circles. Because if you plotted contact versus hard hit rate at low A last year, he clustered with Junior Caminero and James Wood and Nathan Martorella. So I picked Martorella as a breakout, prospect breakout at first base, as part of the magazine. And it's just the contact rate's plus, the exit velocities are plus, the chase rate is plus. He is a bit older for the level, admittedly, but like what we're hearing from the Padres is they love his makeup. They love his work ethic. If you compare him at high A to what Vinny Pasquantino did, they're very, very similar. The walk rate, the strikeout rate, the ISO, the WRC plus. So there's a chance he could be like the next Vinny Pasquantino. I know people are talking about Locklear being the next Pasquantino Manzardo. I think Martorella has a really good chance of being that too. And in fact, even though he's at a lower level, I kind of think I have him ahead of Hunter Goodman in my ranks. I have him at like 125 right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. I threw Martorella on the top 400 at the end of last season for like the heading into the off season update. And then I took him off on the Jan 15th update just cause he was towards the bottom of the rankings anyways. But yeah, he was going to come back on this update. These are very tricky types of players to value for Dynasty when they're, you know, old for the level and at the bottom of the defensive spectrum. It really only takes like two cold months for no one to really care about them anymore. But that's kind of the rule when you're a future first baseman / designated hitter and you're already 22, 23, you just got to keep hitting.
But the advantage to taking those guys, though, that have if they have a cold streak, you can just dump them, is you can churn. You have a spot. Like, I always struggle to see, like, who am I going to drop to try to pick up, you know, the latest hot guy on RoboScout? And if you have someone who's slumping, it's an easy decision. So it actually helps me out to have someone that's kind of volatile.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, the next guy is the one from this first four we're going to talk about where he might be able to provide some defensive value. Ignacio Alvarez in Atlanta's system. He's only played shortstop this year. I know in the preseason BA write-up, you guys sort of had him projected to end up at third base long-term. But, I mean, really the approach at the plate here is pretty cartoonish. I know that kind of made him a popular ad early in the season. So, I mean, I guess with Alvarez, it's easy to sort of see the hit tool here and see that as a clear, like his top tool, probably. But do you just sort of see this being kind of a Luis Arraez type of prototype? Do you see him getting to more power? I know you guys had a fringe average run grade on him. Do you think there's a little bit more there in terms of stolen bases?
I think he can be like a 12-12 guy. I said on a recent pod with Jeff that if you like Vaughn Grissom, then you should probably like Ignacio Alvarez. kind of utility all over the infield can play. They're trying him out at short. Not the like incredible power, not incredible speed, but, you know, solid, good batting average, good OBP. So I think he's solid. I think I mentioned when I was on your pod last year that I have trouble with the Vaughn Grissoms. I have trouble with those like 12-12 with good batting average, like Angel Martinez or Leover Peguero. I'm always like, nah, they don't have that like huge tool that I want, but I've kind of turned the corner on that and I kind of like them. So Jordan Rosenblum, who I kind of co-manage with an OC and who's, you know, one of the founders of Scout the Statline, who you had on a couple weeks ago. He really likes Ignacio Alvarez. And so I kept my eye on him. So last year he had 70 plate appearances, I think. And, you know, he had all the good stuff we want, the pitch recognition, the swing decisions, the walk, strikeout rate, all that stuff. But I just kept my eye on him to see if he could carry it through. And he's definitely carrying it through this year. I have him as the third highest projected OBP at the level. It's high A, right? Yeah, high A. Behind Jackson Holliday and Carter Jensen, the catcher for the Royals, who has a 27% walk rate right now. So high OBP for the level. Obviously, he's also one of the youngest, like 15% of the league. I think he was like the fourth youngest in the South Atlantic League when the season started. RoboScout loves that stuff. So like doing well, doing average or better at a young level, it really likes. He is a bit passive, so he doesn't chase, but he is a bit passive. And I think if you have a 20% walk rate, you probably are passive. I ran that comp tool on him as well. And his closest comps, and they weren't that close. They weren't as close as Mervis to Goodman, but were Tyler Black from last year and Alejandro Kirk. So not that surprising, you know, really good walk rates, low strikeout rate, good contact, all that stuff, and not incredible like home run totals or anything. But yeah, I like Alvarez. I have him in a couple places. I'm not sure what he will become just because he doesn't have that huge like huge speed. And I think I have him, let me check here on my, where I have him. Yeah, I have him in the same, basically the same spot as Martorell and Goodman. I have him like the 130 to 150 range right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple differences between him and Vaughn Grissom, one positive, one negative. The positive is that there's already much stronger defensive reports on Alvarez than Grissom. So, like, I think you could, there's more of a chance probably at this point in their development that Alvarez could handle shortstop than Grissom could. And then on the negative side for Alvarez, I do think I did think more of Grissom's power potential kind of at the same stage than Alvarez. Part of that is just how passive Alvarez is at the plate. But, you know, Grissom, it's not like he was hitting. It's not like he projected to be like a 25 homer guy when he was in the lower levels, but you could at least easily make a case that he was going to be a 15 homer guy. And with Alvarez, you really need to sort of stuff has to sort of change in the profile for him to kind of get to 15 homer power. Do you think that's, is that fair?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Cool. Okay. We got one more of these guys and then we'll head to a quick break, but another kind of like Hunter Goodman, although he's still playing the majority of his games at catcher, but Thyron Lorenzo with the Dodgers. He's at low A, I want to say, and he's really doing a ton of damage at the plate. He's also played DH and first base in addition to catcher. Part of that is just Dodgers. The Dodgers always seem to have multiple good catchers on all their teams. So even if they think a guy's going to stick at catcher, you could see them giving them starts at other positions. But, you know, Lorenzo seems like it's going to be his bat that really kind of carries him.
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about being a BA is just the wealth of knowledge and information I have at my disposal. So I can just like ask Kyle Glazer, like, what's he hearing on these Dodger prospects, or has he seen these Dodger prospects? And So like he helped me in my latest RotoScout article with the Austin Gauthier and Kyle Hurt stuff. But he likes Tyron Lorenzo. I asked him what's he think of him. And he says he's good. He actually thinks he has a good chance to stick behind the plate, even though he's a bit stout. So that's good. I kind of like that, obviously, that you want these catchers that are going to stick a catcher. So I was actually a bit lukewarm on Lorenzo coming in to this podcast before I started doing my research. There's this catcher renaissance of all these great catching prospects. And even at low A, there's this year, like Samuel Basalo, Creed Willems breaking out, Moises Ballesteros for the Cubs, even though he probably won't be.
Those three guys almost assuredly won't stick a catcher.
Well, I think Basalo has a chance to stick a catcher, actually. From what I'm hearing, the Orioles really love his arm and they like his defense and what he's been working on. So I think Basalo has a chance to stick for sure. But yeah, anyway, as I dug into the Lorenzo, he has a very low contact rate. He's a lot of swing and miss. It's like below 60%. So that obviously has to be worked on, but he has a 163 WRC plus, which is fourth amongst teenagers. Jackson Holliday, who's no longer at low A, Ryan Clifford, who's no longer at low A, and then Carlos Jorge are the only teenagers who have a higher WRC plus at the level. His exit velocities are excellent. He's second in the level in home runs with 11 behind another Dodger, Chris Newell. But don't get too excited about Chris Newell, even though he's a Dodger. He's 22. But when I ran the comp tool on Lorenzo with the huge power and the contact rate and strikeout rates, his best matches, and this kind of blew me away, were Diego Cartaya in 2021, same age, same level, same organization, same position, and Diego Cartaya in 2022. So it's like that kind of opened my eyes at the event with the strikeout rate being that high. Like he's projecting very closely to Cartaya there. And even has better like swinging strike rates and higher walk rates. So I'm pumping the brakes a bit. He's not Diego Cartaya, but it definitely got me sitting up in my chair when I saw that. Sounds like the Dodgers do like him, Lorenzo as well. I don't know where he's going to play with Cartaya and Will Smith and Dalton Rushing, Yainer Fernandez even, though he may move to second. But I like Lorenzo. I think he's definitely worth taking a shot on. I think he should definitely be in a 400. I don't think he's near the 100 level, but you know, in the 200 levels, maybe just to see how he does. Obviously keep an eye on the strikeout rate and the swinging strike and contact rate to see if he can get exploited as he moves up from low A, which doesn't have the greatest pitching. But definitely someone to, you know, one of those volatile guys where you pick him up. And then, if he goes in a big slump, you know, you don't have too many qualms about dropping him.
Yeah. Cartaya has struggled after the bump to double A, which maybe not that surprising. Lorenzo is with the strikeout rate with him, is that more an issue of chasing, being passive? Like what are the things he needs to work on in terms of the hit tool?
It's not the chase. The chase rate's actually average. So looking at his swing rate to chase rate, like the swing minus O type thing. He's swinging at pitches in the zone. So like it's like kind of grip it and rip it. I think he's just like really just trying to make incredible contact.
Okay.
That's my take as a non-scout. He's not chasing. Like he's got a pretty good eye. He's just missing when you swing from the heels there. So. But I mean, to end up with a WRC plus of 163 and it's like 140 plate appearances, 11 home runs, like he's making enough contact to, you know, overcome the, he's making enough contact quality to overcome the contact rate. So we'll see. We'll have to see as he gets promoted, because it's definitely something that could be exploited. But, I like what I see right now.
Yeah. And then you mentioned Basalo briefly. I was more kind of inferring that Adley Rutschman's going to be their catcher. Oh. And if they want to get Basalo's bat in the lineup, it'll be somewhere else. But Basalo, he's going to be kind of like a borderline top 150 guy for me. So I love the bat there. And we are going to head to a quick break. When we come back, Dylan White's going to touch on a few more pop-up guys that he's noticed this season.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
A new MLB season means it's time for a new kind of daily fantasy baseball. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played, and they've brought new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. Rival Fantasy's games include Fantasy Bingo, head-to-head player challenges, and Fantasy Book, where users can select over-unders for 2 to 5 players. With games like this, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings, but if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use code RotoWireMLB at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step up to the plate and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena. All right, Dylan, we're back. Got some quick hitters here for you. I heard you kind of talking about Connor Phillips on a recent podcast. Phillips, of course, in the Reds organization, he's just one of these guys with where the stuff is outrageous, and there's, you know, not a ton of certainty that he's a starter long term. But he does have the walk rate down to a career best 11% this year. So how bullish are you or optimistic are you on Connor Phillips?
I'm actually pretty optimistic. I had always kind of dismissed him, I guess, because of that high walk rate. But just looking at the stat cast that you're talking about, the stuff is just ridiculous. He, the four seamers, 96, touching 98, but the induced vertical break is like over 21 inches, which is extremely, extremely high. So his VAA is very flat. He throws it 67% of the time, which, you know, I wish he was a bit less because of his secondary. I wish he had more secondaries that he could rely on. And the curveball is incredible, too. It's low 80s with over a foot of sweep and like over a foot and a half of dive or spike, whatever you want to call it, like negative IVB. And he throws it hard. And there's the amount of movement on it at that velocity is like it's basically there isn't much in the majors that's similar at all. There's like Seth Lugo has as much movement, but he throws it 3 miles an hour slower. I think Matt Brash is close too. But I don't have it in front of me, but when you plot kind of like velocity and then like overall movement and horizontal or vertical, like he's at the edges of the clusters of the cloud of scatter plots. So the question is, can he stick it at starter? And, you know, is the command a problem there? And when I looked at his level, his age, double A, has anyone had a strikeout rate of like 37% with a walk rate of 11%? And there are some names in there that actually were optimistic. So Dylan Cease in 2018 at the same age, had a 39% K rate and 11% walk rate. Christian Javier of the Astros in 2019 had a 39% K rate and a 13% walk rate. And Lance McCullers, 1 year younger, had a 37% walk strikeout rate and 11% walk rate. So all these people had very similar, you know, strikeout walk and strikeout minus walk rates at the same age in AA, and they're viable starters in the major. So it's not a death sentence. That's what I wrote in a couple weeks ago, that it was, it kind of opened my eyes again, like doing these deep dives and looking at comps and seeing like historical, has this happened before? Are there any precedents? Kind of opened my eyes that I think he has a chance to make it as a starter if he continues honing his craft. He's in the Southern League now with that pre-tech ball. So, you know, some of these numbers, including the metrics, the stuff metrics, you know, take him with a grain of salt. But I think the walk rates have gone up in the Southern League because of the ball, right? It's like you can't really control where it's going because, you know, it's unexpectedly doing all that stuff that the pre-tech ball is doing. So I'm kind of optimistic. We see Andrew Abbott, your favorite name to discuss the last month or so. he has succeeded in AAA. And so, like, obviously his stuff wasn't solely reliant on the ball. So I kind of hope the same thing for Connor Phillips. The Reds need starters. I expect Abbott to be up soon. I expect Connor Phillips to be in AAA soon. So I didn't have him in my 400 Connor Phillips. I think you had him at the back end too, but now I have him like pushing top 100 just because of the ceiling from the stuff. I could just see him being just a dominant pitcher in the bullpen, or an inconsistently enigmatic starter like Dylan Cease or Lance McCullers as a starter. So he's very compelling. It's the type of guy I want to take a shot on just because the stuff is so good. He's not surviving on pitchability, which, you know, to me is a bit more iffy.
How would you rank Phillips with Ben Brown and Andrew Abbott?
I think I have Abbott ahead of Phillips. I think I got Phillips ahead of Brown, or they're in the kind of the same area, like the 110, 120 area. I know that's probably a hot take. I think Ben Brown is kind of one of the most more talked about AAA pitchers right now, I guess, because he's one of the guys who may come up and help redraft players, one of the sole remaining guys other than Gavin Williams. But I think I kind of like Connor Phillips.
Yeah, I mean, Phillips had really high grades on his pitches coming into the year, so... You know, unlike Andrew Abbott, so like the AA, the Southern League stuff, it's you know, we were expecting Phillips' stuff to be great this year, coming into the year. So, yeah, I mean the increase or the decreased walk rate is encouraging, and as you mentioned, like a lot of the times with the guys with the best stuff, the control can be the last thing to come as to kind of like finish the development as a starting pitcher. So. I like the Phillips call there. What about Chase Hampton and Will Warren in the Yankees org? Warren was a guy that was fairly highly ranked in that system coming into the year. Hampton, a bit more of a pop-up guy.
Yeah, I think the consensus is Warren is the guy. I think he's in AAA now, right?
Yep.
But I kind of like Hampton. Yeah, so Hampton has a, this might be old, this is from a couple days ago, but 40% strikeout rate, 9% walk rate. He's in high A, so, you know, obviously that's not as good as Will Warren, but looking at his data, it's kind of Connor Phillips-esque. The curve's maybe not as good, and the fastball's probably not as good, but it also has like 20 inches of IVB, and it's very flat. The curveball has a lot of velocity. And movement, like it's kind of in the same ballpark as like George Kirby, Walker Buehler, in terms of speed and movement. So I like it a lot. I especially like it because he's kind of lesser known. Like Will Warren, people know who Will Warren is. If you're trying to trade for Will Warren, it's going to be difficult. because of the Yankee premium, and he's so close to the majors compared to Hampton. But yeah, just the stuff plus underneath for Hampton, I really like. It's well above average. I'm just checking out what Will Warren is at. Yeah, I think the stuff plus actually is higher than Will Warren's. So I guess in a vacuum, it should be Warren because he's doing this kind of the same thing Hampton's doing, but at a higher level. But I just, in my heart, I like Chase Hampton and his potential and his future more, probably because of the cost.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you could probably, I bet 90% of the people listening to this could pick up Chase Hampton in their dynasty league right now. So that part's nice. And he's got less pro track record than Warren, but he's also, that almost sort of means there's kind of more kind of unknown heights to sort of how high you can climb when you only made 6 pro starts and they've been this good. Last two guys quickly before we get to some would you rather. Leonardo Bernal, another catcher, and then Orion Kerkering, this week's or this pod's token reliever. I like talking about at least one reliever with you whenever I have you on.
Yeah, so who do you want me to do first? Bernal is
Well, I saved these two for last because to me they're the most boring. So whoever you think is the least boring of the two I've decided are the two most boring.
Let's do Bernal. Okay. Since we talked about it, we have a context. He's a catcher in high A, so same with Lorenzo, same with Basalo, same with Creed Williams.
It's at low A, right? Yeah.
Low A, sorry, yes. Also a teenager. He was one of my breakouts. Last year he was good. But I didn't pick him up anywhere because no one was really talking about him. I couldn't get a read on you know what the Cardinals thought, etc. But this year he's kind of followed through. He actually is rated higher in RoboScout than Tyron Lorenzo. His contact rates plus, his exit velocities are plus, his chase is average. Sounds like he's good defensively. Sounds like the Cardinals like him. Like I said, he's a teenager, so he's someone I have. I have him more than I have of Lorenzo. But I think it's going to be a little bit more boring. He's going to have, you know, maybe 20 home run power, whereas, you know, Lorenzo's kind of showing the ability for maybe 30 home runs. But Bernal will probably have better, you know, batting average and OBP. So that was a bit of a boring one, but, another name I really like, another catcher, a low A catcher. In my sleeper article, for BA, I mentioned that if he makes it to high A as a 19-year-old, which I think is quite likely, mm-hmm. That's the, you know, the same progression as Francisco Alvarez being 19 in high A. So it's it would probably be the same with Lorenzo. It's probably the same with Basalo, who's actually a year younger. But so it's not unprecedented, but it's quite impressive to be, you know, a teenager in high A as a catcher, especially for an organization who values the importance of the catcher position like the Cardinals do and the Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, I buy everything you're selling. It's just kind of how long do I have to wait for this guy that's got like 20 homer upside, you know? But there's a place for guys like that in certain dynasty leagues.
Yeah, in a 20 team two catcher league, I have him. In a 15 team two catcher, I don't. In a 20 team one catcher league, I don't. It's all kind of depends on the league construction and the format. Like, do you want to wait for a catcher for 3 years? If you have a roster 40, then yeah, probably. But if you only have to roster 15, then definitely not.
Yep, exactly. And then Kerkering, I love talking relievers, but I mean he's at high A.
He is at high A, but he touches 100. His NCAA stuff plus last year. Was it last year? Was eye-popping as well. It was one of the top ones. It was like in the Ben Joyce kind of area. The Phillies were talking about him possibly making it, like knocking on the door of the majors this year. I don't think that's possible. But it's the fastball is excellent. The slider is almost as good. It's just dominant, especially at low A. He was extremely dominant. High A, I don't have a read on him yet, but yeah, if you like to invest in potential closers like Ben Joyce, I think Orion Kirkering. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a cool name nonetheless. I think he's a good one to invest in.
Yes. was it a recent Robo Scout article where you mentioned Nick Robertson with the Dodgers? Am I remembering that correctly?
I may have. He's in the top or whatever. Yeah, I don't think I wrote about him, but he was listed.
He's a recent reliever who's caught my eye. He's at least at AAA, but I'm sure Kirkring has better stuff. Okay, so we've got the pop-up guys. Any other pop-up guys? Anyone that you want to talk about before we get to my three player battles?
No, that's good.
Cool. So I'm going to work kind of down my ranks here, and I basically put together some players who I have ranked very close to each other for tomorrow's update. And I wanted to get your take on whether they should be that close, whether you see a clear player that you would prefer to have in Dynasty. And we'll start with a couple of bigger names. Luis Matos, who recently hit his way to AAA, and Luis Angel Acuña, who just continues to make kind of subtle improvements every single year and just keeps inching closer to the big leagues. Who do you like more, Luis Matos and Luis Angel Acuña?
If you asked me before the season, it would have been Acuña pretty much unanimously, but now it's actually Matos. I have Matos in the top 30 on my latest one. He's improved so substantially in the contact and the strikeout rate, and even the chase rate. He always would make contact, but he was chasing. That was kind of the issue. But this year he's reined it all in. He's actually number two ranked at AA for me behind Henry Davis. Luis Matos, Angel Acuña is down in like the 20s. Just the strikeout rate at AA is 9% compared to Acuña's 22%. The contact rate's like 10% higher. The chase rate's 10% better. I like Acuña's speed. I just like Matos as like just a well-rounded, you know, power speed guy who's now showing that he's got the, you know, maybe the hit tool to complement all that. And AAA, 21 years old, like I like that too. So I have Matos higher. I have him about 40 spots higher than Acuña. Both of them in my top 100.
Yeah, so I've got I also have Matos top 30, and then Acuña just outside the top 30. So I think we're in agreement on Matos. I'm maybe just a bit higher on Acuña. That makes sense. You know, with Acuña, he's getting close enough to the majors where you can sort of start looking at where's he going to play. But I think that he's such a good athlete that there'll be a spot somewhere for him. Just seems like the quality of his contact has gotten better every year. Maybe I'm a tiny bit too high on Acuña though.
I mean, his 90th percentile exit velocities are higher than Matos. He's like over 105 miles an hour. He has a high ground ball rate. That's kind of right. Part of it. So like he's got the raw power. It's just like, will it manifest in games? I see him at like 15 home runs, 25 stolen bases, which is obviously excellent. And if he's playing shortstop, you know, someone you want. I like kind of Matos's well-roundedness. I know it's recency bias because last year I was off Matos and it's only been, you know, 130 plate appearances, but it just, everything seems to be clicking right now. And he just 21 in AAA. I know Acuña's also 21, but in AA, but it's just, I don't know. I'm leaning Matos.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. Acuña 18 for 18 on stolen base attempts. What else was I going to say? Oh, slipped my mind. Okay. On to the next one. These guys were both, outside my top 100 entering the year, and they've just mashed their way into the top 50 for my update tomorrow. Ronnie Mauricio with the Mets and Heston Kjerstad with the Orioles. I feel like I'm going to have like 10 Orioles hitters in my top 50. but who do you prefer out of Ronnie Mauricio and Heston Kjerstad?
I went Mauricio. I have him in the top 25 actually now. Same story as Matos. I was off Mauricio. I barely wanted him in my 100 before the season. I just felt his reputation was carrying him, and he wasn't really doing anything production wise. But he's 2 years younger than Kjerstad. He has speed as well, and the contact rate's actually quite good, considering he chases 40% of the time. It's just like the exit velocities are just ridiculous for someone so young. 22 at AAA. I know everyone obviously talks about the chase rate. And I've said it many, many times before, but a chase rate of 40%, 75% contact rate, but with exit velocity, like a max EV in like 115 miles an hour, as a 22-year-old, like it can work. Like Salv Perez, Javi Baez, Ryan Mountcastle all have high chase rates, like above 40%. And Mauricio's exit velocities are as good, if not better, than those guys too, albeit at AAA, not the majors. So I like Mauricio a lot. I think his ceiling is really high. I think the Mets are playing him at second base now. So I think they, you know, that kind of means they believe in his near-term future in the majors. And like I said, only 22 at doing this sort of thing at AAA is you can't really argue with it, even though he has only done it for, you know, maybe 200 plate appearances this year. Kjerstad, I also have him in the top 60. Great story. Glad he's coming back, and I'm glad he's like just pounding the ball like he is. It's the age factor and having the speed. I have Mauricio ahead of Kjerstad.
Yeah, I have Mauricio ahead as well. Mauricio, I think I've said this before, but he's the kind of poster child for when people talk about sort of how projectable a 16 or 17 year old prospect's frame is when they sign. Like Mauricio has just completely filled out his 6'3 frame. And now he went from looking like a skinny shortstop to now he just looks like a cleanup hitter. I don't know how much he's going to actually run though. Like I know he runs in the minors. We'll see, I guess. I haven't really seen any run grades on Mauricio that make me think he's going to run. The Mets, you know, it's pretty much like Starling Marte who gets the green light. I know Lindor's got like 4 steals, but I don't know if the running is going to be a huge edge for Mauricio. And then obviously, like you said, with Kjerstad, like it's a great story. I don't know. Like I know any statistical model doesn't really know why he's 24 and at AA, but like we all do. So I don't really want to hold that against him because he's, you know, he's kind of like 22 in baseball years. Just given how much time he missed. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on just the how to handle that sort of age thing with a guy where it's not like he was just at low A for multiple years and just couldn't hit his way out of there. He was just not playing.
Yeah, there's definitely that angle. So it's not like he's doing poorly for someone who, what they should be doing at the age of 24 in AA, but at the same time, it's not like that pushes his prime years to now age 29 instead of age 27. Right. So his peak is going to come sooner. And maybe because he's behind on development, it may not be as high. So I totally understand what you're saying, but I also think there's the other side. I agree on the Mauricio. Like I don't expect, you know, 20 stolen base or anything. I have him at 20 home runs, 11 stolen bases with a WRC plus of 110 is kind of what my projection model-y thing shows. So yeah, I agree. He's not like a 2020 guy. But Kjerstad I have at 5 stolen bases. Yeah. So it's, you know, that's why I'm saying that, you know, the speed factor is another nudge in the direction of Mauricio.
Do you have I saw you tweeting about Mark Vientos the other day. Do you have is it clearly Mauricio over Vientos in that org?
I think so, just because he has a position
right
that they kind of want to play him at. Vientos and Mauricio are kind of like back to back on a row scout for AAA. I have Vientos' powers higher, probably as expected. Vientos is kind of looking a lot like what Nolan Gorman was looking like last year in RoboScout, like one of the highest home run rates in AAA, and is he going to be able to play? So I have them kind of close, but as a prospect, I think it would be Mauricio over Vientos.
Yeah, same. One note on Vientos, sometimes I look at the, you know, on Fangraphs, they have that like speed score. Vientos is he's basically like a 1.0 speed score, which is, yeah, it's about as low as you'll see. But that both these guys, you know, like Vientos, Kjerstad, you know, other Orioles, even Mauricio, maybe, like they all, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing some of these guys get traded at the deadline. Just doesn't seem like the Mets have room for all these guys. I know the Orioles don't have room for all their guys, even if we assume like 40% of them just bust. So hopefully something kind of shakes free with these two teams in the next like year or so. Because I would like to see Vientos playing every day. I would like to see Mauricio playing every day.
I totally agree. Do you have Vientos ahead of Kjerstad, or you have Kjerstad ahead of Vientos?
I have Kjerstad ahead of Vientos. I have Vientos kind of, you know, more in the kind of 65-ish range. And, you know, part of it is just the playing time uncertainty and the defensive limitations. It's like, you know, a lot of the times this stuff sort of sorts itself out, but most teams have someone, you know, most teams have their own Mark Vientos who can't play anywhere other than DH and first base. And so it's not a guarantee that he'll find his way into everyday playing time, but I wouldn't put him in the top 100 if I didn't think there was a decent chance that it eventually kind of shakes out. Okay. We got one more for you, Dylan. And I don't know what it is about these two. It's probably like their age and the fact that they're in really good orgs. But Johnny DeLuca with the Dodgers, Justin Dearden with the Astros, they were sleepers coming into the year. And I know Dearden got off to a slow start, but he's righted the ship. DeLuca got the bump to AAA recently. Who do you like more out of DeLuca and Dearden?
I like DeLuca better. I have Dearden in a couple spots, and I was trying to get DeLuca from friend of the pod, Brian Slack, and in my other leagues, and no one would give him to me. Dearden's just been a disappointment. I know he's righted the ship slightly, but it's like still in aggregate, his performance has not been good at all. I checked Steamer before the podcast. They have him at 90 WRC plus projection, Dearden, and DeLuca at 102. And that was, DeLuca was basically only playing at double A at the time. I like DeLuca. I think because of the Outman factor, that Outman kind of overperforming his expectations is kind of biasing me and the DeLuca thing, because, you know, I assume that DeLuca probably will too. All these Dodgers who outperform. I have DeLuca at 25 home runs, 15 stolen bases. The plus speed that he has, like, it's just very tantalizing. He's a good outfielder. I think he's playing all outfield positions too, DeLuca. I know Dearden could also play center, but I just like DeLuca. Just like a solid player. It's like a Dodger guy. I have DeLuca ahead of Dearden, but actually probably like 100 slots actually now.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you were saying Dearden projects as like a below league average hitter. Yeah, I mean, I guess his age is going to work against him, and you know, slow start to the year at AAA. Man, I don't know. I kind of see Dearden playing sooner than I see DeLuca playing. That's tough. Yeah, I didn't think you'd have them that far apart. I've got them like right next to each other, but maybe I'm too high on Dearden.
I mean, I'm fickle. So if they're not producing, I drop them my ranks, but at the same time I hedge, I still have Dearden on my teams. Like, so I like these guys, like the Dearden, Tyler Gentry, Kerry Carpenter, Jack Suwinski, Matt Wallner, all these guys who are doing well, should project reasonably well. If they get the playing time, they'll be, you know, solid contributors. And sometimes it works. Like Suwinski looks like it's working. Kerry Carpenter, it's kind of working. And then sometimes it doesn't. So I actually dropped Gentry in one league and someone picked him up for $150 immediately. That Rob DiPietro and Ryan Venancio, their team. Still holding on to Dearden though. So I don't know why I'm telling that reference, but it's in my ranks. I'll have him low and I'll say definitely DeLuca over Dearden, but I'm still too scared to drop Dearden because, you know, I also dropped Lars Nootbaar and Jake McCarthy, who I also kind of put in the same area where, you know, they're doing well in the high levels of the minors, but I don't really see they're getting playing time. And then of course I regret it when I drop them. So I don't know what I'm saying other than I like DeLuca better than Dearden on paper, but I'm still too afraid to, I wouldn't trade Dearden for DeLuca necessarily unless, you know, there's other pieces involved that kind of soften the blow for me.
Yeah. You're name dropping all these heavyweights, big time homer pickup by Venancio to go grab Gentry for that much. I'd feel fine dropping Gentry too. Dude, when we say friend of the pod, Brian Slack, like, is that just becoming a bit at this point? Like he doesn't go on our pods.
And he doesn't listen to them either, but,
we wish that he was a friend of our pods, but he's just kind of doing his own thing. All right. This has been great. Anything you want to mention that, I mean, I feel like you guys are just putting out so much stuff over at BA. It's hard to keep track of it, but what are you working on specifically?
Well, we're working on this fantasy top 100 and trying to figure out when to release it. Either it's going to be in a couple days or it's going to be pushed back a couple weeks because a whole bunch of other BA content is going to come out and compete with us, cannibalize us as it were. We have our Dynasty 600 update going to be in a couple weeks. I do my RoboScout articles every week. Got our hands on some NCAA data, which I may be kind of running through the RoboScout model to see if it shows out anything compelling. Just trying to help out the whole team. But yeah, just continuing to pump out the fantasy content at BA and do my thing.
Awesome, man. Well, definitely recommend subscribing to BA. I can't imagine why anyone listening to this pod wouldn't have a BA subscription, but you definitely got to have one. Definitely follow Dylan on Twitter, multiple underscores in between the and arrival. Really appreciate you joining me, man. This was a lot of fun.
Always a pleasure. I'll come on anytime.
Awesome. This has been the RotoWire Prospect Podcast brought to you by Rival Fantasy.